Yes.
This is Deanna Spingola. It is Sunday, April 7th, 2013, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. Now, yesterday, beginning at sunset, Jews who observe such holidays began to observe the Holocaust Remembrance Day. And it is celebrated until sunset of today, April 7th. But some celebrations go on for an entire week. Now, my guest today, and we're probably just going to cover this briefly, is Hasso Kastrup, and he is in Europe. His website is Shoah Blogger, S-H-O-A-B-L-O-G-E-R, shoahblogger.wordpress.com. And that's linked on the schedule page. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Diana. Thank you. Hello.
Hello. Well, you have a wonderful blog, and you also have this wonderful gift of being able to translate things from one language into another because you speak several languages. What languages do you speak?
No, I don't speak so many languages, actually. I can read in some languages. I can read in... obviously in English and in Polish, which is my mother tongue, and in German and French and the Scandinavian languages except Finnish what else? Russian and yes, it's more or less that.
That's it? That's all the languages that you can read?
Yeah.
That is amazing. Because I think that we have kind of a shortage of that particular skill or that aptitude here in this country. I took Italian for a year at a local college, and then I also took Spanish in high school. But if you don't use it, as they say, you lose it. So, unfortunately, I get by in English, and sometimes I have a hard time with that.
You know, I guess it may be because I do use all these languages, because I'm, you know, I read a lot of stuff about history and Holocaust, and there is something in Russian, something in French, something in German, and all is being used, you know. So.
Right. And of course, all of those countries, as you mentioned, Russia and Germany, they have and in France, they have certainly covered this issue. And we have revisionists in France and yes. In Germany, those that are not incarcerated at the present time or yes. Who are, well, actually, you can't talk about it too much in Germany. And recently, they decided that in Russia, just this week, they announced that... that they were going to criminalize Holocaust denial or questioning in Russia.
Oh, is it true?
Yes.
It's horrible because one of our best revisionists is in St. Petersburg. How it's called? His name starts with G. He's there and looking in the archives. Is the guy who was wrote some books with Matonio.
Oh, right, right. Okay, well, they had this meeting.
Günter Graf, yeah.
Graf, okay.
Yeah.
In December of last year, they had a meeting. The United States Holocaust Memorial Museum had a meeting, an international conference, where scholars presented all of these papers on World War II and Nazi crimes and the Holocaust, and they held this in Moscow. And then about 4 months later, they announced, in fact, on March 26, they announced Russia Today published an article entitled Russia Moves to Criminalize Holocaust Denial. And this was a senator in the Russian Duma sponsored this bill and got it passed. And so apparently this is going to be imposed in Russia. But maybe if Mr. Graf can just not say anything and just look at the archives without talking too much about what he's doing, then he'll probably be just fine.
He's working as an interpreter in the in Russia, and his by job is looking in the archives of Russia, and he's not publishing so much. He's mostly looking at archives, and maybe it will not affect him.
Good.
But what I'm thinking about is Brother Nathaniel Kapner, who is a fan of Vladimir Putin, and such a move, a legislative move on the part of Russia is going to be a real blow to him.
Well, there's some other things that have also happened in Russia. Apparently when Netanyahu was in Russia speaking with Putin, he talked about getting a monument dedicated to the Soviet Red Army soldiers, which they did erect in Israel,
Oh, yeah.
and Putin attended the ceremony. And the ceremony was, they unveiled the monument on June 25th, 2012, and Putin was there. And it was the same individual, Boris Spiegel, who sponsored this bill to criminalize Holocaust denial. That was the driving force behind this monument. And this monument, and he's Jewish. He's one of the few Jewish legislators in Russia, or at least he was. He recently retired or quit. But he is the one that sponsored the bill, and he's also the chairman of the World Congress of Russian Jewry.
Oh, yeah.
And he called for the, and he also is the person who called for the establishment of a tribunal that would investigate Georgia's war crimes when they were having that war back in 2008. So there is some Russian influence or some Jewish influence in Russia. And I mean, it does say something when Putin attended the ceremony and that he okayed the erection of this monument.
I think, yeah. I think we have to ask our friend, Brother Nathaniel, who says that he has some, inside knowledge from Vladimir Putin, some people, some monks who surround him, and he says good for Putin, Brother Nathaniel. And I have no reason not to believe what he's saying, but it
Well,
is true. It's,
I'm sorry, but people can believe all kinds of things. You can be very, very, very sincere in what you believe. Just as people believe that the earth was flat or that
yes.
other things. Just because you're sincere about your belief doesn't make something true. It's just like people sincerely believe that the Holocaust occurred. Just because they believe it so sincerely doesn't mean that it happened. So, I can sympathize with Brother Nathaniel. And also I've had people on the program who have said some very wonderful things about Putin. But I don't know. After the Project Hammer situation in 1991 and the fall of the USSR, I don't know. It seems like there was just a big shift of the government. And it stayed within the hands of the people that used to control it, and you had, and then not only that, then you had a lot of multinational corporations coming into Russia and taking over a lot of the resources.
Yeah, there's it seems to be a big shift in the ownership of the natural resources. So some of the oligarchs were kicked out, and the other stayed put, and Putin made a lot of money out of it.
Yes, and that did occur. In fact, there was a George H.W. Bush began a multi-million dollar Project Hammer in 1989, And he had this big investment strategy to bring about the economic destruction of the Soviet Union, including the theft of the Soviet treasury, the destabilization of the ruble, funding a KGB coup against Gorbachev in August of 1991, and the seizure of major energy and munitions industries in the Soviet Union. And so I'm kind of thinking, well, I don't know. I mean, I think that Putin has done some nice things, but I have seen pictures of him meeting with a group of rabbis. That's troubling.
And I've seen, a very credible documentaries made by a Russian politician named Boris Nemtsov, who enumerated all the changes of ownership of Gazprom and other businesses from the former oligarchs to the new oligarchs, which are Putin's friends.
Right.
And Putin seems to be so corrupt as no former ruler of Russia before.
Right. Well, I this guest that I had on, Alexander Mezentsev, who writes for the Barnes Review, he really likes Putin. But I think that inasmuch as so many people like Putin and the U.S. government is tolerant of what is going on, although there's, rumbling, so if we don't do this, then Russia might do that, which seems like it's kind of leftover sentiments from the Cold War. I think that Russia was communist. Well, I know that Russia was communized in 1917, and I really, really don't think that they're going to just say, okay, well, that didn't work. Let's do something else. Because I think that capitalism and communism are two wings of the same vulture. And now you have all this monopoly capitalism going on in Russia, where you have, for instance, this guy that had the that was the senator that passed the bill to criminalize Holocaust denial. He's a pharmaceutical tycoon. He's an ardent Jew, and he's a multi-millionaire, and he is in Russia. So,
I think that if you don't have a clean, a conscience, and then you are an easy victim to corruption, and the best corruptors you have are the Jews, and Putin seems to be falling into the trap now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very disheartening for me, because I was together with Brother Nathaniel very much a fan of Putin, but after I have seen these documentaries and read some stuff about Putin, I'm not so enthusiastic anymore.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Right. And politicians, as you say, as you implied, politicians seem to have a lot of things that they would like to hide, because you don't get to the top of the political ladder without stepping on a lot of backs to get there, or without doing some questionable things. And so besides that, I think that some politicians are placed in circumstances where they take evidence, they take pictures of maybe, at a White House party or something, I don't know. And then they use these things as evidence against you when they want you to vote a certain way or do a certain thing. They'll say, well, if you don't do this or if you do that, then we're just going to expose you. Like they did with Anthony Weiner and, of course, the governor here in Illinois, Rod Blagojevich, who said, he said that he wasn't going to do business with the bank, Illinois was not going to do business with the Bank of America anymore, because they got this big bailout award, and then they would not extend credit to a company that was located here in the Chicago area. They would not extend any more credit to them, and the people had to close the doors and lay off all of their employees. And so Blagojevich said, "Well, we're not going to do business with the Bank of America anymore." And the next day, the very next day after this public announcement, after this press conference, the feds were at his door at 6 a.m. arresting him, and he never saw the light of day again. Well, not literally, but he's gone.
It was a SWAT team, I suppose.
Probably, you know how they go busting in like they show on TV so that they can get us all used to all of these home invasions by the authorities. You know, the criminals can't do home invasions, but the authorities can. It's just like the authorities can lie to us, but we're not supposed to lie to the authorities.
It is not even funny, all of
No, it
it.
isn't.
I don't think so now.
So when did you start doubting the Holocaust? Did you always doubt it, or were there times that you actually believed it, that it happened?
Oh, Diana, there was a lot of time, a long time when I believed the Holocaust. You know, don't forget. I did not. I have never told you, but in my primary school, which was in Warsaw. We had actually a little museum of the Holocaust in our history class, and there was a case with a little soap, a piece of soap, and the caption said it was a soap of a Jew,
Oh
and
my. Made from a Jew, not used by a Jew, but made
No, made
from.
of a Jew, yes.
Oh my goodness. And what year would this have been?
It was the middle of the 70s.
Okay.
It was long after this idiocy with Jewish soap were abolished, was abolished. So, but we still had the soap, and I believed in the soap.
Sure.
We did not pray to the soap, though, but it was there. Yes.
Apparently, your school system, your school, whatever system it was, network, didn't hear about the scientific evidence that proved that it wasn't
There was
soap
only
made from fat.
one network, and it was a communist network.
Ah.
Yes, it was Poland was communist at that time, and the schools were communist, and I think they had a central distribution of the Jew soaps, and
I'm sorry.
we had one. No, it's okay. It was meant to be laughed at. The other thing I would say, I was living near the center of Warsaw, and in the district which is called Wola. And in the Wola district, you have Europe's largest Jewish cemetery. And it's an incredible place. It's near the center of Warsaw. It's I checked it today. It's 83 acres of land covered with forest, a kind of forest like trees, and among the trees you have gravestones from since the beginning of the 19th century until now, and the oldest ones are inaccessible because there are so many trees. Nobody is tending it, and, nobody's coming there except some tourists. If you in the, when I was a boy, I liked to come there because there was nobody there and there was very special atmosphere, and I my my you know I was not in doubt about the Holocaust because it looked like a died out civilization. They were the most beautiful, rich gravestones I have ever seen. I have never seen any like that in Polish cemeteries. But some of them were like small monuments because they were the Jewish industrialists who died there, famous singers or actors, but mostly industrialists. And and nobody's standing there. Where are these people? Where they are gone? They must have been killed, all of them. Suddenly.
Oh, so you had the cemetery as evidence, as your evidence.
Yes,
yes, they killed them all, and this is where they planted them.
Yes, yes, it was very convincing, I would say. Yes, and outside of it, you know, I at that time still watched television, and there was a lot of about the how Germans were horrible in during the war, and against the Poles, against the Jews. There was almost a competition of victimhood between Poles and Jews. And the Germans invariably were presented in this television programs, also the you know series for children, as almost as any like animals. We had a very popular series about four Panzer crew members and the dog.
Oh.
It was very very popular, you know, and the dog was presented as more human than the Germans.
Oh,
I can tell. Yes, and of course there was a lot of friendship between because one of the crew members was always a citizen of the Soviet Union, and they you know they went west from town to town from and. And in one of the last episodes of the series, one of the crew members who saw some, I don't know, they just discovered Majdanek or something. I think it was Majdanek, and that they are driving along away, and this peasant boy says, "Oh, you know, after this, if they try to do it again, we have to wipe them out of the surface of the earth."
Ah, and so this Majdanek, as they talked about the names of the concentration camps in this,
yes.
Was it a car? It was a cartoon.
In the film.
Uh huh.
In the movie, yes, of course.
Right.
But in reality, Majdanek was one of the concentration camps. It was not part of the Reinhardt operation, but it was just one of the concentration camps. That's all, you know.
Sure. And did you hear about Auschwitz when you were a schoolboy?
Yes, yes, yes. It was not so blown up as it is today, but yes, I did. My parents had a book. I remember they had an album with photographs, various artistic kind of photographs from the Auschwitz, they were very good and they were very convincing, and you know, I had no doubts whatsoever about the Holocaust. I was a boy in the 70s in Poland, no doubt the Jews were gone. But then I remember an episode with a friend of my mother. She was a journalist, and she was working with in a Catholic newspaper, and it so happened that the chief editor of this newspaper was a fascist before a Polish fascist from before the war.
Mm-hmm.
After the war, he became a Catholic, you know. And he became Catholic, and he became became loyal to the communists, and
okay.
They let him be this chief editor, but he continued with his views. Of course, he was anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish before the war, and he was anti-Jewish after the war, and yeah, I remember she was talking. It was a birthday of her mother or something, and she was talking to someone else, and she said to someone, and I was listening. I was 7 years old or something. Oh, the only good thing that Hitler did to Poland was to clean it of the Jews, from the Jew, of the Jews.
Oh my.
You know, and I heard it and I never forgot it. And I have been thinking about it for a long, long, long time because I did not understand it at that time.
Right.
What it meant, why she said that, and what it meant. But it was simmering within me, you know. And the other episode was an uncle who was talking to another uncle, and he said, you know, I'm convinced that that this Holocaust operation, it was arranged by the Jews because they wanted to get rid of all these poor Eastern Jews in order to just get the young, you know, strong ones to Israel and get rid of the others. And I was maybe 8 years old at the time. And then I, you know, kept thinking.
Well, there was a lot of anti-Semitism in Poland.
Oh, there still is, but I can tell you why. You know, there were, before 1939, 10% of 10% of the citizens of Poland were Jews.
Right. They had the largest concentration of Jews in Europe, or anywhere.
In the world, yes.
Yes.
There were inevitable conflicts. It's inevitable. And there were inevitable, you know, contacts between the groups, between Poles, some Poles, and the Jews. The nobility, historically, the nobility was using the Jews as administrators of the goods. So they were. I don't know if you have ever read about the great uprising of the Ukrainian peasantry,
right? Mm-hmm.
The Cossacks in the middle of the 17th century. It was mainly against the Jews and against the Polish nobles. It was the Khmelnytsky uprising.
Oh, okay.
And they were killing Jews and the Polish nobles alike.
Oh.
So yes. But as I told you, there were contacts were also inevitable. In Warsaw, where my mother is coming from, there were a third of the population of Warsaw was Jewish.
Right.
And I can tell you also, you know how I look, but the listeners don't, and I look a little bit Jewish, Jewish enough to. For Brother Nathaniel to tell me that he when we met that he thought I was Jewish, but I'm not.
Okay. Let's get that clarified.
Not mentally.
I think a lot of people. I mean, people have even accused me of being Jewish, and I can't see for the life of me how they would come up with that because I'm very fair, and I have Danish ancestry, English, Irish, Danish ancestry, and German.
Anything but Jewish.
Yeah, right. So, anyway. Well, I'm glad you clarified that. And I don't think that you would be writing so many negative things about them or exposing their machinations as you do on your website, which is relatively new. And I'm really glad that you've created that website.
It's new, but it's taking a lot of my time, and I have a lot of pleasure editing it.
That's great.
I say, yeah. But we have been friends for a long time, Diana. And we had a lot of conversations about Poland and about
yes.
Poland's role
yes.
in the Second World War. Especially in 1939,
right?
But I'm not a typical Pole.
No, you're not.
That's the problem, because my mother is Polish, but my father is coming from the Western Poland, And the family is originally from Bavaria, and they came to Poland in about 300 years ago, and they kept their, their language and the how it's folkish, how it's called, the folklore. And my paternal grandmother still sang to me German lullabies, and I was talking to her in German, so she taught me some elementary German. But I didn't realize when I was maybe 5 or 4 years old that it was German. It was just the grandmother's language. And then when I saw these horrible Germans in the television, I did not, I did not associate, these were
Of
two different
course.
things,
You love your grandmother, and of course,
Yes.
and here they're trying to tell you that these people in the movie are evil, but you know your grandmother's not, so how could this
Yes.
be?
Yes, that's the way it is. So, during my life, particularly when I realized that the Holocaust has not happened as it is advertised, that there was no gas chambers. I began to look also at the history of the Second World War and the role of Poland in it, and the role, of course, the role of Germany, and the roles changed somehow, the roles
Right.
changed.
I know you were, that's what I love about you, is that you're so objective that you will look at things objectively and without a bias because of your ethnicity,
I'm trying.
but you want the truth, and even if it's painful, regarding your native land. I mean, it's just and in fact, you're the one that told me about Donald Day's book, and I rushed right out and found a copy. Well, I didn't go anywhere to find one. I got one on Amazon, and so you have shared with me some of the things that you have found, and I really appreciate that.
It was a very, very good book, Donald Day's, Onward Christian Soldiers. If anyone
Yes.
can get hold of it, it's a great book. Donald Day was a correspondent for Chicago Tribune
Right.
in northeastern Europe between the wars. And he when he did not longer when the Chicago Tribune sacked him under Jewish pressure, he went to Berlin and became a radio speaker and a journalist for the Berlin radio
Right.
in the English language. And he wrote this wonderful book on what Christian soldiers, who is talking about his time in mainly Riga, because even though he was a correspondent in northern Eastern Europe, he never actually managed to go to Russia. They never gave him the visa because he was too objective.
Right, right.
He gave it to Duranti, who was a communizing correspondent for New York Times, but never to Donald Day because
Right.
he was just
He was
too
telling
truthful.
the truth, and they just couldn't
Yes,
have
yes,
that.
yes.
And some of the portrayal of the things in Poland, I was amazed. I was
Yeah.
just amazed at how he portrayed certain areas, the lack of industrialization in that country in
Yeah.
some areas is just amazing.
Yeah. I was also thinking about it because, nobody is so in the world, maybe with the possible exception of the Japanese, is loves work so much as Germans do. But the Poles are not, they are not animals. They have taught throughout centuries to work also. But the problem is that since the end of the 18th century, Poland was partitioned between the Russian Empire, the Prussia, and the Austrian Empire. And neither of these empires wanted to put their most important industries in Poland, because in case of Poland becoming a country again, they would have lost it.
Right.
So Poland was kept as an agricultural, you know, backwaters.
Right. And now, didn't they receive, that's where they received a lot of the Jews, is from the Pale of Settlement in Russia?
They had it. They
yes.
had it.
Yeah.
It was actually, you know, Poland was partitioned in the second half of the 18th century.
Right.
And Russia got the part with the Jews. And it was actually called the Kiss of Death from Poland.
Oh, goodness. Yes. But then the Russians did manage to keep them in that area.
Yes, yes. And I can even tell you why. Because the Russian Orthodox Church has its origin in Greece. And Greece means Byzantine Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And the Byzantine Empire kept Jews in their place, which means they had no access to education, administration, and military. Throughout the 1,000 years, the Byzantine Empire was a power. And the Russians just did the same. And that's why they decided to keep the Jews where they were, which is the western parts of Russia or eastern parts of former Poland.
Uh-huh.
And only the real industrialists, Jewish industrialists, could live in the big cities
in
Russia.
Right.
And there was a Jewish joke about two Jews meeting in the middle of Moscow, and the one asking the other, "What are you doing there?" I'm producing wine. You know, how can you produce wine in the middle of Moscow? And I'm doing it of where do you get the vine from, wines from, you know,
the how grapes, uh-huh.
What grapes from? I'm doing it from rosins.
From where?
You know, the dried ones.
Oh, raisins.
Yeah.
How funny.
Yeah.
Well, they did manage to get a few into Moscow and into some of the other big cities. And then that's a problem, that as soon as you get a little group of them, then they just start devising all of these plans on how to gain control. And that, it's just like letting in letting in just one little, I can't think of a thing that you would let in, and then pretty soon you have 1,000 of them.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Right. I was going to say a rat, but I didn't want to make that connection.
No, of course not.
but I mean, they say that if you see one rat in a building, then there's probably 1,000. But I didn't want to make that connection. But I guess, in as much as I've already said it, I guess I did make that connection. But it was not on purpose.
It's not nice. It's not.
No,
nice.
It isn't nice. No.
But they had an epidemic of assassinations in Russia.
Oh yes.
In the second part of the 19th century.
Right.
And it was many of them Jewish terrorists.
Oh, absolutely.
But I would venture to say that those who actually did the revolution, it was the Russian Jews who re-immigrated from America.
Oh, right.
It was the guys who came with Trotsky.
Right.
And with the money from Jakob Schiff.
Yes.
This was the crew who did the revolution.
And they were trained in the Standard Oil compound in New Jersey.
Yes. Yes, precisely. Yeah.
And they took a lot of the Jews from the Lower East Side of Manhattan
Yes.
and trained them, and then they went over and had a big revolution.
Yeah.
Well,
It's a paradoxical that it was actually, you can say, Americans who did the Russian Revolution.
sure.
Almost you can say
Right.
that. But that's the way it was. And the English who did not know what was going on, they stopped them with the money in
Oh,
Newfoundland.
right. And then they got a phone call. In
Yeah.
fact, President Wilson, Woodrow Wilson, is
Yeah.
one that called the Canadian authorities and said, "Hey, you let these guys through."
Yeah, let my people go.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So, yeah, that was really something. But it was because Russia had so many wonderful, wonderful undeveloped resources, and the capitalist here in this country wanted access to those resources.
Sure. But it was, I think also it was a kind of Jewish vengeance for the Tsarist policies against the Jews.
All
They
right.
wanted power in Russia. They wanted the power over the central bank, and they could only get it by doing revolution because they could not influence Nicholas.
Right.
The Russian aristocracy was adamant about the Jewish influence. They did not want to have any of it. So the revolution was necessary, and it was done,
Right.
and it was very successful.
Right. And that's how how it worked here in this country, is that they had a revolution. They called it the Civil War, and that changed the culture, the structure of the government, and allowed it to be communized and socialized, and allowed the corporations to come into their own to claim the 14th Amendment as a way of doing what they wanted to, and they've been doing it ever since. And I guess by force, that's how they take over countries. Although in some areas, in some cases, they do it a little more subtly. It has been after the so-called Civil War, then it was very subtle, because they continue to preach to the population, or to indoctrinate the population. Oh, we have a free country, and we have freedom of the press, and we have all these wonderful freedoms. And as one broadcaster says, "Oh, this is the greatest country on God's green earth." And of course, he's Jewish.
Yes.
But actually, we are living under communist Jewish rule.
Yes, the same in Europe. It's incredible. It's an incredible blossoming of the Jewish power in these days. Even though we can talk about it, and I hope I can keep my anonymity, even though we are talking together, but they have never had such power in the world as they have now.
Right.
And I was thinking about how come that they in such short time were able to take so much power in America.
I think I was thinking about this morning. Well, I was thinking about it yesterday, because somebody emailed me and said, asked me in just a simple sentence how they could get away with it, and why the people in this country were allowing them to get away with it, is because that they totally control the press,
Yes,
worldwide
yes.
press, before World War I.
Yes, but why? But why? I have because of my job and otherwise, I'm interested in biology, also, and there is when bacteria attack a new species, there are only two possibilities: either the species you know, kills the bacteria, or the bacteria kills the species, and both die. And only in some cases, you have after the acute period of, you know, fighting, you have this slow you know, accommodating to each other, and then you have development of parasitism. You know, the parasite is not going to kill the host, and the host is unable to kill the parasite, and they live together in some kind of equilibrium. And I think the European nations throughout centuries learned to live with the Jews. But the American people who came to America without many traditions, many of the art of living with the Jews was left in Europe, and they, America became Jew naive, not Jew wise, but Jew naive, and when the Jews became coming in great numbers from 1881.
Mm-hmm.
They had a very easy play, and they invaded like bacteria. I'm sorry, I'm using this biological. I'm sorry for the Jewish listeners.
I guess if I can make a connection to rats, I guess you can make a connection to bacteria.
you can compare Jews to bacteria and us to the swine or whatever. You know, it's okay. A biological comparison. But,
okay.
But I think. And I think in this bacteria naive or Jew naive society, they had an easy play. Then within 30 years, they overtook the central bank, mm-hmm. and they have Bernard Baruch, steering the idiot Wilson. And then the other one, Dexter White is steering the other idiot, Roosevelt.
Yes.
And today, America is partly rotten from inside, and today, it's the decision is going to be made or to fall. Who is going to survive, the Jews? Or the host, you know, the bacteria or the swine.
Right.
I think so. Because it does not look like the Americans are becoming Jew-wise. They don't. It does not look like from Europe, at least.
Right. Well, I think it's because they have the ADL. They early on in 1843 they created B'nai B'ris, and B'nai B'ris was designed to conceal all of the criminal activity. And you can say the same thing for the ADL. The ADL covered up all the crimes, the criminals that were coming in to the country who were engaging in very, very bad crimes, and these were mainly Jewish criminals. And so they wanted to conceal this. And then you have the ownership of the press from 1915 forward. So, and people are just ignorant. They are ignorant of what has gone on. And also, they do not read history, so that they don't understand the history of other countries and what has transpired.
You know, as any good bacteria knows that in order to take control of the host, you have to attack the nervous system,
right.
And the nervous system is in the hands of the bacteria, and so we have the internet connections, and Spingola speaks, and Brother Nathaniel, and the American Free Press, but it's a niche activity. You know, the CNN and so on, and Ray O'Reilly Factor and everything else is in the Jewish hands.
Right.
They cannot say anything against them. So
and if they even make those implications, they get fired from their jobs. I mean, there have been people who have had to leave their jobs.
Yes. No, there are films like Inglourious Bastards are being made.
Right.
America is still occupying Germany. The greatest American base, a military base outside of the U.S. is in Germany. Each German new chancellor or prime minister has to go to Washington to get approved.
Right.
You know that.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah. There was a secret treaty made in 1947 or so.
Yeah.
And Germany has to fight for NATO whenever they are told to fight for NATO.
Yes, because they are still occupied.
Right.
You know, after the First World War, we had the Versailles Treaty. And you know, even though Germans could not negotiate in this treaty, they at least could sign it.
Right.
But after the Second World War, there was no treaty.
Right.
The country is still occupied, and they have not even a constitution.
Right.
You know, the biggest country in Europe does not have a constitution. They have something which is called basic law,
right.
Grundgesetz, which is not a constitution. It functions as a constitution, but it's not, you know. And what is this Federal Republic of Germany is a temporary construct.
Right.
What the German Reich, the German Empire has never been dismantled. Lawfully,
right.
It's still existing.
It always amazes me, and I'm always asking the question: what is it about the Germans that the Jews hate? Now I know that they hated the Russians, but it seems that they really have it in for Germany.
You know what? I think that they feel that Germany, even though it was weak throughout centuries, it was a weak place militarily. Germany was always, you know, a spiritual center of Western civilization. And the moment they have destroyed this center, they have destroyed the Western civilization, and that's the goal. And they are about to achieve it because, you know, the birth rates in Germany are very low.
Right.
It's 1.2 per woman. It's nothing. The Germans are dying out. It's not only Italians and Spaniards and Russians. It's also Germans.
Mm-hmm.
The Poles are afraid of Germans coming back and taking back the Pomerania and East Prussia and Silesia, but with whom? Who is going to be the soldiers?
Right.
There are no soldiers because there are no babies.
Right.
It's the problem.
And this is a homogenization of the races that we see here in this country also.
Yeah. It's not the kinds of you with your pretty blonde hair who is getting a lot of kids. It's the Mexicans.
Right.
That's the problem. Why? Right. Why is that?
I don't... Well, one thing, you do have abortion in this country, and they're making it easier and easier just recently in the last day or two. They've made it legal for a young girl to get a pill that will abort, you know, it's an after-sex pill that will make certain that she's not pregnant. And she can get that pill without any signature from her parents, without her parents' permission or knowledge.
Oh, yeah?
And that just functions as a green light for a young girl to do anything that she wants to do and not worry about it. And of course, you have the failure of the culture with the immorality, and this is coming out of Hollywood. They are portraying life the way that they would like people who should have values to live it. And then you have the working mother, who and really the that was done via the women's movement, which was operated by a couple of three or four Jewish women. And when you see all of these things happening, you think, wow, is that all coincidence or is all of this very deliberate? And I think it's been very deliberate. I don't believe in the conspiracy theory of that, things just happen, coincidental history of the world.
No, I don't either. But this abortion business, they are, it's hitting the Jews also. I as far as I'm as far as I remember, the greatest rate of abortions in the world is going on in Israel
Right.
among the Jews. So they are not immune. If they have created the movement, it's hitting them also.
Right.
So
Mm.
it's not a great success if it was going to be a hit against us.
Right. Sure. Well, I really like your blog. What kinds of things are you going to be planning to put on there in the near future?
At the moment, I'm in the middle of translating the wonderful interview between one can say chief German Jew called Michel Friedman and the chief German Nazi
Ah.
or National Socialist who Horst Mahler, who is in prison now. It's
Right.
he's the husband of Sylvia Stolz,
Right. Who
who
just got
was,
out of prison not too long ago.
Who defended Ernst Zündel, and she got out of prison, and short after going out of prison, had a speech in Schweiz, Switzerland, for something which is called AZK, which is called anti censure coalition. And it was a wonderful speech. I have it on my website also. It just you just, he she just said it all, how it's functioning in Germany, how what kind of freedom of speech is going on in Germany,
Right.
and she got she immediately one Jew from the town where she was having this speech accused both her and the guy who was organizing this event, Sasek was his name, for rejecting the Holocaust or something like this. But
Right.
they are going to go to a court again.
Oh dear. Oh
Yes.
dear, oh dear, oh dear.
Of course. But Horst Mahler, he's, I think he's 77 years old now. He has 6 or 7 years back in jail, so it's a life sentence for him.
Right.
He was this interview was a kind of siren song for him,
Right.
and it was published actually in the German edition of Vanity Fair. It was there for some weeks, and there it dis then it disappeared completely, disappeared from the web page of Vanity Fair, and then the Vanity Fair itself disappeared.
Oh.
Yes, it's now called Glamour.
Glamour.
But I got hold of this interview, and I'm translating it in part because it's over 80 pages.
Oh.
Yes, and it's a great interview between a mega Jew and a mega German.
Ah.
And they are, you know, exchanging blows. It's I think it's a good. It has never been translated before.
Oh, so, good. So we can hardly wait until you get it done then.
I hope so.
Yes.
Yeah. And I have some good translations from Vincent Renoir.
Uh-huh.
Which is in English it would one would pronounce it Vincent Renoir. The guy who Karin Jäger is speaking right. sometimes with, and he's a good guy. He's a really good guy. He has some great videos. Unfortunately, they are all in French. He sit down in the middle of the meadow and he starts talking about why National Socialism was great, and it's very interesting. But it's in French. So it's the public is very limited.
Right. We do have a gentleman in Canada, Wayne in Canada, mm-hmm. who does some films, and he has dubbed some of the German films, and he's a German speaker.
Mm-hmm.
So there are more and more people. Well, relatively few, but there are more and more people like you who are doing this kind of work that allows us to read and to have access to the things that are in German, and this is wonderful.
You know, there are plenty of good articles and speeches in French, in German, also in Russian, but you have to have someone to translate it.
Right.
It's so important. You can't expect of Americans to learn the other languages so well to be able to understand the fine print. It's impossible.
Right.
So, but if you, I have time, you know, I my children are adults, and I it's my hobby.
Sure. Well, it's a wonderful thing to be doing. Now, people can sign up to have access to your website, to have an email from you. I'm trying to find the thing where they can sign up to be on your list. Is that on? Let's see. I'm not finding it. If you go to showablogger.wordpress.com, there's a disclaimer up there, indexed. To the reader. Okay, would it be under there?
I'm not sure if I put it there. But you can always through your email account you can always get the news about that there's new article.
Okay. Now how do you do that? Because I'm trying to find the place where people can sign up and let's see. I'm not finding it. I know I signed up to be on your list, but I just don't know how I did that.
Are you getting
mm-hmm.
my?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It must be somewhere, but you know I'm not so good at computers, so I have to think about it.
Okay. Well, as long as you're good at translating things that we would like to read, then that's a wonderful wonderful thing.
But at least once a week I have a new thing.
Okay.
At least. Sometimes twice a week. So
wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Well, it's been very nice chatting with you. We haven't chatted for a while.
We haven't.
So
that's true.
Anyway,
but it was a first public chat.
Oh yes, so I'm honored that you.
We use it. We do it privately.
Yes. This is the first public one. We've privately chatted. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm honored that you agreed to do this.
I really am. Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, have a wonderful rest of the day. And,
you too.
And we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much, Diana.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.